All right, Friday night on the Fan pregame, Jesse and Ailish here for the next hour. We got three guests lined up for you. We're going to get the BNS, Ben Smith, in a minute. Trey Wingo will join us in the second half, and Bob Herrig to wrap things up. We just watched the Kings plate, and I'm anxiously waiting the final results because our fantasy football draft is in the order of the horses.
That's amazing.
I think my horse might have went the opposite direction. I know it's only one lap, but I think my horse got lapped. So I'm waiting to find out if I picked last or
I don't understand. How does that happen? Like immediately?
Well, we were on the outside lane. I was horse number 13, Vitality. And
I was
the horse. And I think Vitality just stayed on the outside and went to the concession stands. So,
but we discussed this the other day.
Sad.
This is like potentially a good thing because you don't want to be middle of the pack. Nobody wants to be sixth in a fantasy draft.
I just want to know.
You want to be like
refreshing the
one, two, or 12.
Okay, well, I'm probably 12. So.
All right, so it's not that bad.
Fingers crossed. We'll get to that more when we let you know the Kings played standings. But the horse that did win was Caitlin Her Greatness, which is the only female horse, which was named after Caitlin Clark. So Caitlin
Let's
Clark
go.
Stays winning.
Let's go.
Staying winning this week is Ben Nicholson-Smith, who joins us. I mean, it's been a busy week, Ben. Chris Bassitt podcast going viral. Joey Votto retiring from the Buffalo parking lot. You got Jays hitting home runs like crazy. Never a dull moment this week as a Blue Jays reporter.
You're right. Actually, when you put it that way, I hadn't really thought of it in those terms because you just kind of take these weeks day by day. But it actually has been quite a week considering they're playing the Reds and the Angels. It's not exactly a playoff race for any of these teams. But yeah, it's been something else.
I want to follow up on the power surge part of that question because I, for one, did not see this coming. Post-trade deadline, the Blue Jays bats have been among the best in all of Major League Baseball when it comes to power. So I'm curious, on your side of things, did you have any inkling that the Blue Jays' power was there when they lost some of the bats that they previously had at the deadline?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely what you need to see, what you want to see if you're the Blue Jays, right? They need more power than just Vlad Guerrero Jr. It can't be a one-player show. At the same time, I'm not totally sold that this team is just going to hit home runs at this rate going forward. I mean, it would be great for them. And, you know, you never know. Maybe Yoenis Clement will just keep hitting homers every single night the way he has been this week. But yeah, I still think that's a big question for this team, along with the bullpen. The power, how sustainable that is, that to me is pretty massive. And I think it's a good step to see George Springer hitting three homers this week and Horowitz going deep and obviously Yoenis Clement. But I think I want to see it a little longer before I say that this is a new trend.
Yeah, it's such a good point because Ailish and I were talking about this before the show. It's like, obviously, you want to see these guys have success in the last couple of months of the season. But there always is the risk that they have this incredible hot streak through 2 months. And it's a little bit of a mirage or a facade that sort of puts the wool over your eyes. And then in 2025, they say, oh, like if you looked at what happened in August and September, the power numbers were there, everything was great, so we're just going to kind of run it back. Like, wouldn't that, in a way, be the worst-case scenario for the front office and for this team in general?
It would be on the list, for
yeah.
sure. It would not be good. Yeah, I think it can go so many different ways, right? Like, thinking back, obviously a long time now, but Jose Bautista, 2009, he has an amazing September, and people are not exactly sure what to expect. Goes out in 2010, hits 54 home runs, has this incredible career with the Jays. So that's the best case scenario. We're not seeing anyone here who's necessarily, you know, calling to mind Jose Bautista.
Right.
But all you can do is finish strong. And then, you know, that doesn't assure anyone that that's going to be sustained into 2025. All the production, Yoenis Clement up to 3 WAR on the season, right? And that's great. That's an awesome season for a guy who was cut by the A's last year. So incredible job. All kinds of credit to Yoenis Clement. But at the same time, it doesn't guarantee that he's going to replicate this production next year. It doesn't mean that the Blue Jays should just close themselves off from adding another third baseman in the offseason. So I think you obviously just want the players to do as well as they can and then sort everything else later.
So we're going to see Chris Bassitt on the mound, and it's been, as I said, a little bit of a busy week for him in terms of headlines. Not to go back on Monday's and Tuesday's discussion, but I just wonder for you, since you're around the clubhouse, you're around the organization, like any sense of how those comments that went viral might have just played out with the organization or with the players that are sharing that locker room with Chris Bassitt?
Yeah, I think that for the players, you know, it's so much a move to the next day, on to the next thing. I don't think anyone's, you know, worrying about that or harboring any grudges at this point, or even on Monday for that matter. I think they move right past it. But when it comes to the organization, it's not a good look when you have a player openly being, you know, a little critical, right, of the front office, of the steps that they made, of the team that they built. And so I think to some extent there was a little bit of a conversation that had to be had. And from everything that was described to me, Chris Bassitt was accountable in that conversation. And everyone's on the same page now and ready to move past it. But, yeah, I think it was a little bit disruptive. And that's probably something that is not ideal when you have a team that's trying to focus on playing as well as they can down the stretch here.
Yeah, Ailish mentioned no shortage of storylines this week, thankfully for us, because this is usually one of the slower weeks in sports. But we had a lot to talk about, and that includes Joey Votto, who obviously retired. And I'm just curious on your side of things, like, what was his demeanor when he showed up to the stadium on Wednesday night, you know, having made that announcement on Instagram? Like, obviously, it's got to be tough for him, knowing that there was always the opportunity for him to play for the Blue Jays and he could never quite get there. So could you sense sort of a disappointment or frustration? And ultimately, did you think the Blue Jays made the right decision in not bringing him up for some sort of odd ceremonial at-bat or two or three or whatever it would have been?
I do think the Jays made the right decision to not call him up just as like a figurehead, as a mascot. That's I don't think anyone benefits from that. Now, if he had been able to get himself on track and produce, I think that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
And if he had earned his way up here, that I think would have been a really, really cool storyline. I would have been here for that 100%. But yeah, as for his demeanor, he was just truly on brand Joey Votto, right? Which is to say, candid, reflective, critical of himself, accountable. I think he called himself awful when it came to the performance that he had at Buffalo. He wasn't even joking. He was just like, "I was awful." Like, that's it. Like, and I think that's certainly what we've seen from him as a very public star of Canadian baseball for such a long time, and of Major League Baseball as well. So it wasn't a surprise to see him go out on those terms, even if it was a little bit unconventional.
What do you think the future relationship will be like with the Blue Jays and Joey Votto? Is it almost easier that he never played in a Blue Jays uniform, so there's no natural, like, hey, do you want to coach? Do you want to be a part of the media? Do you want to be a part of a honoring Joey Votto night at the Rogers Centre? Do you think that this is kind of like the end of it, or will there be a way that he's recircled back into the Jays in the future?
I think at this point, Joey Votto gets to call his own shot. And if he were to go to the Blue Jays and say, hey, I'd like to be a roving infield instructor, or I want to be an assistant hitting coach in the major leagues, a special advisor, I think they would be pretty open to that. I mean, you would have to be. At the same time, if he goes to Fox Sports and says, I want to be beside Frank Thomas and A-Rod on your postseason show, pretty sure Fox Sports would listen to that.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's going to be in a position. He could go to the Reds and say, I want to be a bench coach. Like, he can kind of call his own shots in a way that most people, most athletes cannot, and that's a credit to what he's done as a Major League Baseball player for such a long period of time. At the same time, when we were asking him what's next, he said he was going to go to a yoga class and stop in at the library. So, you know, I'm not sure that baseball is like, you know, the thing that he has to do. And listening to him on the Dan Patrick show, I want to say it was earlier today, he was saying that he's ready to face that challenge, just setting baseball aside, and looking at himself and his life and what that looks like in a post-baseball environment.
One of the reasons that Votto wasn't able to crack the major league roster is because bringing him up when he wasn't performing so well would have taken at-bats away from other younger guys. And we discussed Ernie Clement and him hitting a home run yesterday off a pitch that was 5 feet above the ground. Just an absolutely absurd thing to watch in real time. But among the younger players who have gotten more of an opportunity in the last few months, is there anyone that has stood out to you that maybe, I don't know if I'd go as far as to say has solidified a spot on the roster for 2025, but has certainly made a case for themselves heading into the offseason?
Yeah, and thankfully for the Jays, there are actually a few guys that you could pick here. But I'll zone in on Leo Jimenez. I think that he looks to me like someone who can help a big league team, someone who can help a good big league team. Doesn't mean that he's, you know, going to become a Jeremy Peña who's, you know, hitting 15 homers and playing every day and sustaining that workload and that performance at such a high level. But I'm impressed by him defensively. We're seeing him connect for some real power and make really hard contact at times. So for a young player to come up into this environment, filling in for Bo Bichette at shortstop periodically, playing a bit of second base, to me, Leo Jimenez looks like someone who can be an impact major leaguer in some capacity. Maybe that's a utility role. Maybe that's more of a bench role even. But he's someone that seems to be able to handle this level.
All right, Ben, we appreciate you joining us. I know you got a busy night ahead, so we'll let you go. Enjoy what maybe will be a quiet day, but you can't trust this week. It's a bit spooky, so something was going to happen by the time you walk up from here down to the field for your hit with Blue Jays Central, so good luck.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks so much,
Ben.
Guys.
Thanks,
appreciate
Ben.
Ben Nicholson-Smith, Jays reporter, and at the Letters podcast, of course. Let's talk about the Ernie Clement home run last night.
Absurd.
And Ernie Clement in general. Like, I saw this thanks to Sportsnet Stats. His rank since All-Star break in hits, he's got 33, which is second. RBI, he's got 19, which is second. OPS, 749, which is second. And total bases, 52, which is second. He's having an absolute awakening. And that hit was unbelievable, that home run. So 4.6 feet off the plate, which is the second highest turned home run since tracking began in the mid-2010s. So I've never seen something like that. That's like basically as tall as me. And afterwards, he kind of joked about being like, I probably shouldn't be hitting balls like that. But it worked. And everybody's face, the reaction in the dugout, and even the opposing team was kind of like, how did that happen? It was pretty awesome.
I'll never forget. Like, I didn't play like fast pitch very often. I didn't play fast pitch very often, but I remember I got called up. One of my buddy's brother's team, who's the older team, and it was fast pitch for the first time. And I remember specifically getting a fastball like at my eyes, like the one that Ernie Clement saw last night. And I swung at it and obviously missed. And everyone's like, what are you swinging at? And there's Ernie Clement and on like a, whatever it was, 95 mile an hour pitch,
amazing.
Just hitting it at his eyes, just a ridiculous moment for the Blue Jays. I think in Ernie Clement's case, like, he's up there in age. He's 28, and you start to wonder, like, okay, is this guy going to be able to parlay this into a successful Major League Baseball career? But the fact is that he's been up. Like, he's had a lot of at-bats this season. Like, 309 at-bats is not a small sample size. So I think the longer that Ernie Clement can continue this, the better shot he has at seeing himself carve out a spot in 2025, because that's what you're looking for. It's not like this is a September call-up that gets 50 at-bats, you know, hits the tar out of the ball, and then you're like, wow, like, that was a really nice run. Are we going to be able to see more of that? If he's able to sustain this through the rest of August and then into September, it's going to be pretty hard, I think, for the Blue Jays to say, well, that was a bit of a mirage, because the sample size continues to grow by the day, and it's been incredibly impressive.
We've got a lot of little side stories to go through before we take a break here. At 6:30, we'll bring on in Trey Wingo, who will help us talk a little NFL, and then we're going to split that with Bob Herrig, who's going to help us talk a little golf. But I want to get through a couple smaller stories that are pretty awesome. Danny Jansen is going to make history, not for the Blue Jays, but kind of. So let me sell you on this. I saw this a month ago when there was a game between the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. And it got postponed, and the action is going to continue on Monday. So, more importance to watch Monday's Red Sox Blue Jays doubleheader. So, Jansen was playing for the Toronto Blue Jays, and he was in the game when this happened, and now plays for the Red Sox. So, what's going to happen is Alex Cora announced on Monday that Danny Jansen will substitute for Reese McGuire, former Blue Jays, at catcher, who is not on the current roster. So Reese McGuire is not on the roster, so they need to have somebody catch. That's going to be Danny Jansen. And he will now become the first player to play for both teams in the same game in MLB history. He will catch the at-bat that he himself started and must be pinch hit for. So you need like a chalkboard with a Venn diagram to figure this out, but he's going to make history. It's going to be really, really cool. I don't know if the perfect circumstance for this to happen is ever going to happen again, but I mean, that's going to be unbelievable. So this was the game back in June 26th that's going to be played on Monday. So you got to watch it.
Yeah. So whoever's going to be batting for him better not strike out, because that would be tough.
Yeah. There's no precedent really to be like, okay, so how does he... And Danny Jansen is a longtime Blue Jay. Yeah. So he's obviously thinking like, well, this is where I used to be, and now I'm not. It's just... It's very interesting. So Monday is going to be really fun.
It's very cool because it's one of those things that ever since he got traded and that game was, you know, had been postponed, it had been talked about for a while.
Yeah. Like, I talked about this with Jesse. He's like, there's no way they'll do that. Yeah. And like, I think they're going to do it.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? At the end of the day, you're in an entertainment business. And like, that's a cool little storyline for fans who are in attendance and fans watching to be like, hey, that was like a cool moment.
Pretty cool.
You get to watch history. It's like anytime you get to watch history of whatever it is, it can be fun and engaging. So,
and that's doubleheader on Monday. So 2:05.
Shout out to Alex Cora for giving the fans something to talk about.
Because he easily could have just said like, no, you put somebody else in.
Yeah.
But you know what? Live a little. It's the middle of August.
I like it.
Now I can't say that anymore. It's the end of August. And so we need things to talk about. And there you go. There's Monday's story. Okay. A couple other things here. So Kevin Pillar, I love Kevin Pillar.
Yeah.
He was up on Twitter today and tweeted out the following. Hello, Toronto. Love being back. Going to be giving away 4 tickets for Saturday's game. So that's tomorrow. First person to answer this question correctly will receive 4 tickets for Saturday's game. Which former teammate's jersey will I be wearing for batting practice tonight? So I don't know if we found out what, because he tweeted this today. Maybe we can look, Mike, maybe we can see if we found like the jersey he wore, because they're going to start in about an hour. But that's awesome. Kevin Pillar giving back to the Blue Jays fans. So if you're listening to this and isn't giving the tickets away, maybe you can still go and tweet him back. But Kevin Pillar, fan favorite.
Don't fans have this like connection to the 2015 teams?
I just can picture him like going out to catch the ball. I just see it.
I remember my favorite catch of his. Like it was the one in left field where he just.
Which one?
he climbed the wall. Like, he scaled the wall. Call him Superman, but like it was more like a Spider-Man thing. He was like, and just, I don't know how he did most of the things that he accomplished in the field while he was here. But there's always going to be a soft spot. I think it's funny because they didn't win. They didn't win the World Series and get to a World Series. But there was something in those teams that you thought, hey, like they actually have a very legitimate chance of doing it. And as a result of all the memories that were made, obviously the Bautista bat flip, the Edwin home run, all of Pillar's catches along the way, Blue Jays fans are always going to have a soft spot for players on those teams. And Pillar is certainly one of them. And anytime he comes to town, you can sense it in the ovation that he gets. Like even, Blue Jays fans are great. Even Santiago Espinal got a great ovation,
It's
still not quite the same as, players who were around during the 15 and 16 years, because those were the glory years of the last decade or so.
Yeah, we're looking to relive those sometime soon. Okay.
Might take a while.
Quick NHL pivot. Obviously it's been a big week for, I think there's been a couple people requesting trades that have got them actually on their way out. I mean, Rucker McGroarty yesterday with the Jets, that was a while ago that he wanted out. He gets traded to the Penguins, but we find out just before we come on the air that the Sharks have acquired Yaroslav Askarov, who's one of the most premier goaltending prospects available. So the Sharks, obviously in a major, major rebuild, they've got a really great group of young talent that aren't really ready to win a cup, but they need someone to stop the puck, and that would be him. And, he was kind of stuck behind UC Saros, and UC Saros signs an extension. So I see the reason to want out. If you want to be a part of a tandem, that's a pretty hard guy to be stealing net minutes from. So Askarov goes to the Sharks, where he will be the star goaltender. He'll have an opportunity to play lots of NHL minutes. And the return was a first-round pick, top 10 protected, Magnus Crona, who's another goaltender, and David Erdstrom, who was the 32nd pick in 2023. So Sharks are doing a lot of off-season lifting. I mean, it doesn't mean that they're going to win their division or make the playoffs, but that's a great grab for them to get a goaltender that wants to play and to get himself some NHL time.
Yeah, and in the last, 2 minutes or so, Elliot Friedman tweeting that Askarov signed a $2 million extension that kicks in after next season with the Sharks. Trade requests are really interesting because most of the time I find myself on the side of you can request a trade all you want, but you're an employee at the end of the day and the team can decide to trade you or not. But in this particular case, with a kid who so desperately wants to get the opportunity. Mm-hmm. We see it in the NFL, you draft a quarterback, kind of sits for, you see it more rarely nowadays, but sits for 2-3 seasons and learns. But when the Predators re-signed UC Saros to an 8-year contract extension, they're like, well, where's the avenue for this guy to be able to play? And for a highly touted first-round pick who was the best goalie prospect in the draft in that year, you're like, well, it kind of makes sense that the guy wants to play. Like, he doesn't want to start his NHL career when he's 25 years old. So from that perspective, just like you, I understand why he would make a trade request. Obviously, goes without saying that the team is well within their right to do whatever they want. But in this case, again, like the Winnipeg Jets were forced into, it seems like the Predators were able to get a pretty decent haul on the way back for a guy who clearly wanted out. Like, the teams don't have leverage in that situation. But no. Kudos to both the Predators and the Jets who were able to execute and actually get something in return, because that's pretty rare.
Okay, we got the answer to the Kevin Pillar jersey.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No.
Okay, it's in your inbox. All I can think of when I see this player is, Goins, Goins, Goins! and it's a beautiful red Canada Day jersey.
Love that.
You know, one of his former teammates. I think that was a pretty popular response. But Kevin Pillar tweeted out that the winner couldn't attend the game tomorrow, so he's selecting someone for Sunday's game after the game tonight. So, you know, someone, you might get lucky and Kevin Pillar might send you tickets, so just go check out his Twitter page. But yeah, that's a fun one. I have a best bet for tonight before we pivot off and take a quick break. Been a big week for Chris Bassitt, if you hadn't noticed. So I think he's going to deliver tonight. I think he's going to be like, you know what? Everyone be quiet because I can put up some good stats here. So I'm going to have him over his K's, which is 5.5, and the Jays to win handedly. I mean, things are going really well for the Jays right now in terms of just being able to score runs, and this team is not good. Plus, the Angels, this is a weird stat I saw on Twitter today. The Angels have not won on August 23rd in the last 10 years. I don't know what that means. Today is a weird day for them. They don't perform well on August 23rd. Something in the moon and the horoscope. So they have not won a game on August 23rd in 10 years. So that's my pick.
Jays, I don't want to be a cynic, but does that seem like a streak that eventually has to end?
You know what? All I do is present the information for you. So you can either
be
a believer or a loser.
Back-to-back nights?
I picked the over last night instead because of the pitching situation.
Right.
And I was close, but anyway.
Yeah.
I just feel good about the Jays. It's a Friday night in the city. Let them win. Let's go. You don't even have a pick written down, so.
Yeah. Well, I'm just because I'm cold as ice.
Yeah, okay. So Jesse's pick is nothing.
But
Jesse's
my Skeens pick last night, did you see what happened?
What happened?
He threw a 6-inning shutout.
Oh, well, yes. You tried to fade the
it was
world's
half
next thing.
Yeah, it was a run. The Pirates won 7-0. Yeah. It was close.
Okay.
I had a shot.
So we were both close. Okay, well. You know what we can share is I have the results of the Kings Plate standings.
Okay.
And I did not finish dead last. Actually, producer Mike Gentile will be picking last in our fantasy football.
Oh, all right.
He finished dead last. So you'll have 10th pick, Mike. But you know what? Like, as we just tried to sell you on, 10th pick is good. I actually have the middle of the pack. I have 6. So I actually am more devastated because I pick 6 and then I pick in about an hour and then I wait another
hour. Rough.
And so I ended up 6.
It's a 10-team league.
Yeah. So
why don't you ask me to be in it?
You have to talk to Dan Yelly about that because very difficult to get into our sports league.
Yeah, but 10 is just, it's not enough.
It's very difficult to get in.
There's too much talent in a 10-team league. You can't have that.
So I'm picking 6. Vitality, my horse, he must have started, like, he was out of range on the screen. He turned on the Jets on that final turn and he got me in to 6th place. And I'm picking one spot ahead of Justin, whose horse was Rafa Rue.
Oh, 7's really bad.
So 6 and 7, those are your fan pregame hosts.
Yeah, that's
don't come to us for much fantasy football advice because we're going to be right in the middle. Blake with first pick, classic. So, you know, he somehow nerded himself into first place. So that's all I can
give
you.
So hold on, the selection of the horse, let me just get this straight. The selection of the horses was
random.
Random.
You got randomly selected a horse. My horse's name was Vitality, which had 20-1 odds to win and ended up 6. Justin's horse, Rafa Rue, was kind of like 9-2.
Mike, what were the odds on your horse?
Not good. Oh, his was I think 50-1.
Yeah.
Mike had the worst horse.
So it makes sense.
Last. So you were mentally prepared.
He was mentally prepared for that.
Anyway, so we're doing our draft really soon, but now I know. So I know when I'm picking 6th. Send me advice. Who should I be targeting at
6? There's actually nothing better than fantasy football draft season.
Yeah, it's good. And we'll keep the fan. We'll talk a little fantasy, but we'll keep some NFL talk coming on the other side. Trey Wingo's going to join us. We've got a lot to go through with him. And then we'll wrap up the show with Bob Herrig, who's going to tell us what's going on at the BMW Championship. Couple Canadians in the top 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's exciting weekend ahead.
Trending.
We are trending. We're trending upwards. And then you've got the Angels and the Blue Jays at 7 p.m. start with Chris Bassitt on the mound. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with our guy, Trey Wingo.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan pregame. Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, the Fan for the next half hour. We're going to chat with Bob Herrig in about 15 minutes to wrap up the show, wrap up the week with a little BMW championship slash FedEx playoffs.
Love it.
Slash, you know, President's Cup chat. Get us all teed up for the weekend ahead.
Yeah.
You didn't like that?
Teed up.
Okay.
I got it.
It took a while. we'll get to a little football chat with Trey Wingo's joining us. Trey, appreciate you jumping on. How are you?
Good. First of all, make sure you say hi to Bob Herrig when you have him on. Love okay. Bob, one of my favorite guys I worked with at all time at ESPN. So we'll make sure you line up today. Say hi.
Okay? We could just merge you guys on the phone together if you want to chat.
Perfect. Let's do it.
Okay. So I saw on your Twitter page, and I always laugh at this, annual post, just remember that preseason games are like regular season games, and the way the tofu burger is the same as a Wagyu beef burger. Technically, they're both burgers, but they could not be more different. Proceed with caution. Okay, so how should we proceed with caution? Because either we're fans or we're people in the media, and we're trying to glean as much information as possible from every single snap. How should we consume regular or preseason games?
Well, if someone plays well, that's great. You always want them to play well. It's much better than playing poorly. But understand there's not a single situation on defense, for example, where they're studying tape of the person who's playing. Mm. That doesn't happen in preseason, okay? It's like, okay, what are his tendencies? What does he like to do? What does he do well? What doesn't he do well? None of that exists in a preseason game. They don't do that. They're basically going to run some plays that they're comfortable with, and the defense is going to run some things that they're comfortable with. There's very little blitzing in a preseason game. So I have seen so many guys look like Hall of Famers in preseason, and then regular season comes around, like, whoa, it's crazy. They're not doing the things they were doing before. Yeah, it's because they're bullying now. They're trying to take away the things you do well. I always say this. Remember, the 2008 Detroit Lions went 4-0 in the preseason and 0-16 in the regular season. Okay, so just take preseason for a grain of salt. We're all in this hyper energetic state where we've missed football for so long. And we're so happy to see it on our TV and we can talk about it. But don't buy into the BS. Don't swallow the medicine because it's not the same in any way, shape, or form.
It's easy to fall into the trap, Trey, when it's someone who's performing really well. But what about on the other side of the spectrum? If it's someone who doesn't look as good as you thought they were going to during preseason, and someone I'm thinking about particularly is Anthony Richardson. Obviously, he's coming off a major injury last season, but people are expecting great things from him in Indianapolis, and it hasn't looked great during the preseason. So I know you just gave a very eloquent answer about not reading too much into the preseason, but when they're not showing as well, is that when the alarm bells maybe start to go off a little bit more?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I was told last year that Anthony Richardson was the most amazing physical specimen we've ever seen play quarterback, right? He's bigger, he's faster, he's stronger, he's more athletic than anybody that's ever played. And then go to the regular season, and he can't finish a game, right? Mm-hmm. Can't finish a game.
Yeah.
Like, so if we're not seeing really good things out of Anthony Richardson, I would be concerned. Daniel Jones is not changing. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's 2024. He was drafted in 2019. And in his last preseason start, he decided, you know, what's better than giving up a safety by being tackled in the end zone? I'm going to throw a pick six. So Daniel Jones doesn't understand math. Okay. Daniel Jones isn't changing. He's not changing. He's not going to wake up on week one, opening day of 2024, and be a different quarterback. That's fool's gold. Okay, that's a fool's errand. So understand that Daniel Jones is who Daniel Jones is, and the rest of the team has got to be really great around him. So there are certain markers you can see in preseason that will be an indication. For example, the Chiefs with this offense, and it's sort of on hold for a while with the injury to Hollywood Brown, but with Hollywood Brown and Rashee Rice, who will be suspended for a few games, anywhere from 4 to 6 is what I'm hearing. And Xavier Worthy, this unbelievable rookie who was the fastest at the combine and fastest ever, but also had great round one tape before he ran the 40. they're taking more shots downfield. Last year, Patrick Mahomes had the lowest yards per attempt of his entire career because his receivers were, wait for it, awful, and they still won the Super Bowl. You're going to see a more explosive offense in Kansas City season because it has the weapons with Worthy, Rice, and that didn't have last year. So there are indications that you can find, but don't fall in love. Like, there are people that I love who I respect greatly and have said about Bo Nix in Denver. Bo Nix has it. Well, he has it in regular season, but a lot in preseason. A lot of times, it in preseason, put an SH in front of it, and that's what happens in the regular season. Okay, and I'm not trying to denigrate. Great, awesome. That's cool. But I take it very much a Zen philosopher approach when it comes to preseason. We'll see. Maybe it works out. Maybe it doesn't. But more often than not, the hype never translates.
Trey, we're going to quickly reconnect with you because your connection was just a little bit spotty. But, you know, he makes a great point. We'll get him back in a second. This is the only sample size we have right now. Is a lot of rookies come in. We've got their college stats. We've got, like, these small appearances we see of them in some games, some in camps. Like, I definitely feel like I read so many columns where it's like, you know, grading the rookies A+, and you're like, yes. And but really, it's a completely different game. The way that they strategize, the amount of work that goes into scouting the other team, like, it's just a little bit different. But when you're so excited about football, sometimes you're just consuming it and letting it influence you regardless.
Well, it's hard to have patience in life. Like, everyone wants everything immediately. You want instant gratification. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing when you're looking at athletes who are highly touted rookies coming into any sport. You want them to immediately be good. And sometimes that's just not the way it works, unfortunately.
Yeah. Trey, I think we got you back. Sorry about that. We'll keep moving on here. So maybe like an off-the-field story in a sense is like the absence of some of the top wide receivers in the NFL last year. Of course, we've got CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, Brandon Ayuk, all obviously doing this contract dispute situation. I wonder for you, like, how close to the season, like, where's the concern level that this is going to impact the team, impact their season? I know they're all individual players, but is there one that's, like, you know, the top of the worry meter for you?
Well, I'm curious as to why the Bengals are messing around with Ja'Marr Chase. Mm. Like, I will say this. You know, Joe Burrow's back after missing most of last year. You know, they had the whole T. Higgins issue. They're not going to pay him. Well, that was because they wanted to pay Ja'Marr Chase. And they're not paying Ja'Marr Chase either. And Mike Brown, who is as old school as an old school owner gets, has said the time for negotiating is gone. I will tell you that someone I trust and believe in very much, I said, what do you think about what's happening in Cincinnati? And this person said to me, the vibe isn't great. And it reminds me a little of the last couple of years of what went on with Stephon Diggs in Buffalo, right? Like, Stephon Diggs is an explosive wide receiver. There's no denying that. But he was summoned out of Minnesota, and now he's been jettisoned from Buffalo. Something wasn't right. And people always want to say, oh, chemistry is just something you take in school. No, chemistry matters because football is the most team-oriented sport of all the major sports, whether it's baseball, basketball, football, hockey, or soccer. You need unison. You need team 11 guys, whether it's on offense or defense, pulling together. And that can get in the way. So I am a little concerned about what I'm seeing and hearing out of Cincinnati. I'm also a little concerned about what's going on in Dallas for a variety of reasons. I think CeeDee Lamb's going to get a contract, but then what are you doing with Dak? What are you doing with Micah Parsons?
Yeah.
And then let's add into the fact that the Cowboys won the division last year. The NFC East has the longest stretch of no team repeating as division champs in the NFL right now. No one's done it since the Eagles won it 4 years in a row last in 2003. So until I see otherwise, the Dallas Cowboys are not winning that division this year. And, you know, Jerry Jones has said the Super Bowl is what matters. Well, you've had Mike McCarthy win 12 regular season games 3 years in a row. The last time that happened is when they won four. They had four seasons in a row when they won in the 90s. The difference was they won three out of four Super Bowls those 4 years. This team has been basically a playoff fader every time. So I have big concerns about what's going on in Dallas based on history and also the fact that they're sort of settling for 12 regular season wins instead of thinking about what goes next.
Yeah, there's a lot of Toronto Maple Leaf parallels with the Dallas Cowboys. It just feels
like
they're just never going to win, never going to be able to get over the hump because the Dallas Cowboys, just like the Leafs, have been a very good team for a number of years and just haven't been able to get over the hump. You mentioned Stephon Diggs and the Bills in that answer, and I want to ask you because you talked about how important chemistry is. And with the Bills not having Stephon Diggs there, obviously you would immediately think that that's a major hole in the receiving core and it's going to be difficult on the offense. But if chemistry is so important and the vibes are perhaps better in Buffalo, are they automatically resigned to taking a step back, or is that something that they can all sort of work towards if the feeling in the room is better and then maybe things come out on the other side and they actually find a way to improve?
Well, here's my concern about Buffalo. It's not just Stephon Diggs. It's basically a brand new, outside of Khalil Shakur, it's basically a brand new receiving group,
yeah,
right? Everybody's gone. Like, everybody's gone. And then you have the injuries. You know, Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer are gone. Matt Milano goes down, and I cannot begin to tell you what a good player Matt Milano is, okay? Then they've dealt away a couple of their interior defensive linemen. So I still think Buffalo is the class of that division. I'm not buying the Dolphins hype, because the only team they beat with a regular season with a winning record last year in the regular season was the Dallas Cowboys, and we just talked about their shortcomings. And the Jets, I'm sorry, like, I kind of find it funny that a team that last won a championship before man walked on the moon is pinning all of their hopes to turn that around on a quarterback who has a less than subpar resume when it comes to the postseason. I think he's tied for the most one and done losses, even though I do not believe wins and losses are a quarterback stat, but the NFL does, so that's why I'm referencing this. You know, Aaron Rodgers' failings in the postseason are a real thing. They're a real thing. And I find it ironic or interesting or amusing that the team who's had all kinds of issues with the postseason and coming up short is counting on a guy who routinely has come up short in the postseason. So he's going to be 41 this year, coming off an Achilles injury. And we don't know what Robert Saleh is as a head coach. We know what he was as a great defensive coordinator for San Francisco, but there's still a lot of questions about the Jets. I am not buying the Jet Express hype when you have a team that has perpetually failed and they're counting on a guy who has more often than not failed in the postseason to turn all of that around. It doesn't seem to make sense to me.
We're chatting with Trey Wingo, NFL analyst, host of the Alternate Routes podcast. Okay, so Chiefs, obviously the Super Bowl betting favorites. That would be a three-peat, something that's really, yeah, really, really difficult to do. So what stands in the way
never
of
happened.
Them?
Yeah. It's never happened.
What stands happened. In the way of them being the first to accomplish that task?
History. That's it. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs won the Super Bowl last year with arguably the worst team he's had around him, especially offensively. Mm-hmm. In his tenure there, they still won 11 games. They still won the division. And, you know, everyone said, oh, well, you know, they've hosted the AFC championship game all these years in a row. They've got to go on the road. Didn't matter. Went to Buffalo. Didn't matter. Went to Jacksonville. Didn't matter. Like, I cannot begin to explain to you guys how significant this thing is that happened last year. In January, before the end of the regular season, it was their last game of the regular season. They were playing the Chargers, and Patrick didn't play because they already won the division. It didn't matter. He sent a group text to his family, and the group text to Patrick Mahomes' family read, I've decided we are going to win the Super Bowl. Not that I think we can get there. Not that I think we have a chance. I've decided that we're going to win the Super Bowl. Flash ahead to Super Bowl 58 in Las Vegas. The Chiefs had one touchdown drive in that game. One. And when was it? In overtime, when they needed a touchdown to win the game. He ran for it on fourth and one. Mm-hmm. He had two completions. He had another one where Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who is now a Bill, but he's out for a few weeks with a sore neck, had an eight-yard completion and then ran backwards and turned a second and two into a second and 14. He completed two passes to complete that first down, ran for another first down, then hit Travis Kelce for a first down, and then threw a pass to Mecole Hardman for a touchdown. He literally just took over and won the game. It's the coldest thing I've ever seen in my life, that text. And, you know, like, the best way to describe it, you know, Lamar Jackson is a really good player. There's no doubt about it. In the Lamar Jackson era, the Ravens as a franchise have a grand total of two playoff wins. The Chiefs, under Patrick Mahomes, have three Super Bowl wins in the same time frame and have 15 postseason wins. The dude just knows how to get it done.
Yeah.
The only thing stopping him and stopping the Chiefs is the fact that history says it's never happened, but I believe this is the best team ever equipped to pull off the three-peat.
Yeah, I mean, that's exciting stuff to hear because, you know, I feel like we almost take them for granted a little bit in the fact that they've been so dominant. Last one for you, Trey. It's an incredible rookie crop of quarterbacks. The unfortunate injury to J.J. McCarthy kind of takes the air or the wind out of the sails a little bit. But are you buying the hype with Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels? Because for me, like, it's hard to expect these guys to come in right away and make an immediate difference. But oftentimes we sort of mentally prep ourselves to have that happen. Are you expecting them to hit the ground running?
Well, here's the best way to describe it. Historically, half of these guys will fail. Okay. From 2000 to 2019, there were 56 quarterbacks that were taken in the first round. Of those 56, less than half of them, 46%, got a second contract from the team that drafted them.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's just the historical average. More than half of these guys will likely fail. Now, I will say this about Caleb Williams. I don't know if there's ever been a rookie quarterback taken number one overall that walks into a better situation than Caleb Williams. Like, when Justin Fields was a first-round pick of the Bears, his two best weapons were Velus Jones and Darnell Mooney. Okay? Okay? Caleb Williams walks in with DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, DeAndre Swift. They trade for Keenan Allen,
yeah,
by the way. Before they traded for Keenan Allen, a week before that trade happened, we had Justin Herbert on our podcast, and he could not stop raving about how important Keenan Allen was to him as a quarterback. So that's what Caleb Williams has. And, oh, by the way, when Justin Fields was there, they had the worst defense statistically in the history of the Bears franchise. Well, now they have a top-10 defense. And, oh, by the way, they also drafted Roma Dunze, the kid out of Washington. Caleb Williams is set up for success. If he doesn't succeed, it's on Caleb Williams. It's not on the Bears. Jaden Daniels, I think, is interesting. The Commanders have a real opportunity to be that team that goes from worst to first this year. They have Dan Quinn is a really good defensive coordinator. That is their head coach now. They brought up some weapons over from Dallas on the defensive side, and they have weapons on offense. And I remember seeing Jaden when he was a freshman playing at Arizona State under my good friend Herm Edwards. I think Washington is going to be a really interesting team. But again, historically, 50% of these guys are likely to fail based on 20 years of research.
Well, Trey, we appreciate your time. We'll say hi to your friend on the next line as we pass over to Bob Herrig. So we appreciate you joining us, and we'll be talking lots of football, and we'd love to have you back on. Thanks so much.
You got it. And I got a big announcement coming next week. I can't say anything about it now, but there will be a big announcement where you will see a lot more of me during the football season. That is coming next week.
Okay, well, awesome. Congratulations in advance.
Definitely.
We'll catch up after. Thanks so much.
You got it, guys. Thanks so much. Take care.
Trey Wingo, NFL analyst, host of the Alternate Routes podcast, and something else to be determined.
Yeah.
All right, let's do a quick pivot. Bob Herrig joins us, Sports Illustrated author of The Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. Sorry for keeping you waiting, Bob. Your friend Trey Wingo, who he made sure to mention that you guys go way back, just wanted to keep talking some football. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I appreciate you having me. Yep. And that was nice of you to note that. Yeah, we do go way back.
Yeah, I want to talk about, obviously, that you're there at the FedEx Cup playoffs in Colorado. And there's really a fascinating player of the year race taking shape on the PGA Tour this year between Scottie Scheffler and Xander Schauffele. Xander, obviously, there's two majors. Scottie, the Masters, the Players, and the Olympic gold. I mean, I can really think of no better person to ask. Where do you fall in the player of the year vote between Xander, who's had an incredible season, and Scottie, who just parlayed what he did a year ago into yet another unbelievable season?
Yeah, listen, it's kind of a fun debate because typically majors trump all. It means more than anything. But when you're making that argument, you're usually making it when a guy wins two majors and another guy wins, you know, four tournaments, say, and not a major, or maybe four tournaments and a major. You know, last year that was sort of the case, actually. You know, John Rahm won four tournaments and a major. Scottie Scheffler only won twice, but he was such a dominant player statistically that he was the player of the year. But when it's 7-2, and one of those seven is the Players' Championship, and You've also got an Olympic medal in there, and all of those wins were with Schauffele in the field. So, like, it's not that Xander's done anything wrong here, but, I mean, I just don't know how. When you're talking about the entire year, I think you have to go with Scheffler. You know, he's been winning since March. And, you know, Xander has two wins, and they're huge wins, but it's only two compared to seven. So, you know, if Xander were to win this week, although he's quite a far ways back, or if he were to win the FedEx Cup next week, you know, maybe then it gets a little bit more interesting. I think the PGA Tour players hold the FedEx Cup in high regard, and they give that a lot of weight. And he'd have two majors and the FedEx Cup, you know, which is unbelievable year. Yeah. You know, like there's not really a bad answer here. It's just that I'm going by seven wins, and I'm including the Olympics, which, you know, I think we saw was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, so the BMW is happening right now, and of course we saw an incredible day from Adam Scott. I wonder, like, this is unique. Colorado doesn't get many, you know, high elevation opportunities for the PGA to go and watch a tournament at this level. Is it anything different for the players? I mean, Adam Scott today shoots the lowest round, 9 under, just a course record of 63 too. But just it being in Colorado, does it feel different for anybody, or is it the same old for the golfers?
No, I think they like a little change of pace once in a while. You know, if it were up to me, they'd move all three of these playoff events around every year. And there's a lot of reasons for why they don't, and they're understandable. I mean, they have contracts with sponsors. FedEx is based in Memphis, and so they like the idea of having one of these playoff events in their backyard, which is why that event and the tours had a relationship with East Lake and Coca-Cola for years. But, you know, in a perfect world, you'd move these around a little bit more. And the BMW Championship has been doing that. Mm-hmm. Now, last year, they were at Olympia Fields in Chicago. Next year, they're going to be at Caves Valley in Maryland. I think that's good. You know, the variety is good. First of all, you're bringing golf to different markets that don't typically have it. And for the players, you know, look, these are big tournaments with a lot at stake. And you know, why same old, same old? You know, some of these courses suit certain guys and don't suit others. And so now you go to a place where they have to learn something new. I think that's good. And look, it's being very well received here. They don't have a tour event here, and so people are flocking out to see these guys.
I just got about a minute left. I just want to ask you quickly about the President's Cup, because it's at Royal Montreal next month. The Americans 12-1-1 historically at this event. And obviously, Taylor Pendrith and Corey Connors are two guys who are likely going to be there for the international side. They're also performing really well this week. But is there any reason to believe that the international side can change things this time? Because it's been just dominance from the Americans.
I think the reason there's belief is that the U.S. team is really kind of in flux right now. Look at some of the American players that you would have thought would have been there. Max Holm has really been struggling lately. Justin Thomas, you know, might not make it to Atlanta next week. You're going to have some new faces. They hit Sagala possibly there. Bagaya, you know, hashtag Bagaya, another player. I mean, they haven't done this before. And so, you know, it's obviously having Scottie Scheffler, having Xander, having Cantlay, having Morikawa, that's some pretty good strength there for the U.S. side. But, you know, listen, I think we all would like to see it be a little closer. It's just mind-boggling to me that it's so lopsided when you consider how much the U.S. has struggled over that same period in Ryder Cups and really how talented the international side has been. And you know what? I kind of hope Mike Weir goes hard on the Canadian angle. Try to make it as much of a home field advantage as you can and pick as many Canadians as you can. You know, I mean, he could have six. In theory, it's probably going to be more like four. I don't know if six is that much bigger of a deal than four. But if there's a way to make it six, he should make it six, you know, and just go all in on it, you know, and just make it as much of a home field, home court, home course advantage as you can.
You're preaching to the right choir here, Bob. We are all for the Canadians. We're gonna let you run. We appreciate your time on a Friday night. Enjoy the rest of the weekend, and hopefully we get a chance to chat soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate
Be well.
That's Bob Herring, Sports Illustrated and author of The Drive, Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. That's it for us. We are up against the clock. Blue Jays, Angels up next on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 Fan, and we'll see you on Monday.
See you Monday.
See you Monday. Another week of Jesse coming up. Woo!